I'm Jenna Wortham.
I'm Wesley Morris, and we're two writers for the New York Times.
I mostly write about how humans relate to technology.
And I mostly write about how movies and popular culture relate to humans.
This is Still Processing. Hi.
Hi.
This is our pop culture confession booth. So what's on your mind for this week?
Okay, first of all, Tiger.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Tiger.
Tiger Woods.
Mm-hmm. Tiger Woods.
Arrested for DUI over the weekend.
I mean, listen, I can't imagine what this is like being the best in the world at something for a long time, doing one really bad thing, maybe over and over and over again, and then your punishment for life is never being as good as you were, and it's probably driving him insane. What else is on my mind? I saw the Baywatch movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why it exists. It is a good opportunity to look at very good-looking people frolic around on the beach while fighting crime. It raised a number of questions for me about the beach, and I've been thinking about it in those terms. Chris Cornell died 2 weeks ago. I forgot to mention it. I love that man's voice. He had the voice of an angel who was being dragged out of heaven. Audioslave, Soundgarden, like right now behind me is going to be the sound of Chris Cornell singing, I don't know, Like a Stone. He had a great voice. And finally, I just want to say, Mitch Landrieu, Mayor Mitch Landrieu of New Orleans, thank you for that speech last week.
Hear, hear.
Took down the Confederate statues, or took down four of hundreds of Confederate statues. Gave a really eloquent speech about coming to realize how something that he just took for granted as visual markers of being in his city actually were eyesores, trauma inducements for a lot of the black citizens of that city and state, and is waging a campaign to take them down.
These statues are not just stone and metal. They're not just innocent remembrances of a benign history. These monuments celebrate a fictional sanitized Confederacy, ignoring the death, ignoring the enslavement, ignoring the terror that it actually stood for. And after the Civil War, these monuments were part of that terrorism, as much as burning a cross on someone's lawn. They were erected purposefully to send a strong message to all who walked in the shadows about who was still in charge in this city.
There's a lot more work to do, but this to me, as just even a token, was really powerful, and the speech is really moving. What's going on with you?
Well, lots of things. I mean, I'm still watching The Leftovers, clearly.
I'm about
why
three
I continue
episodes
to dress
behind.
Like this. I just want to know how many more times they can show Justin Theroux naked, wet, in a body of water, falling into a body of water, coming out of a body of water. I mean, the whole thing is just a study in body sculpture. I don't know. I'm here for it. I just hope we get to see his butt a few more times before the show ends.
God.
One more episode. I'm all in. I'm done.
Okay, go on.
I need to shout out all the white people who reached out to me over the weekend and let me know that they do, in fact, watch Queen Sugar. It's a very hashtag LOL to say that even my mom reached out and was like, I watch Queen Sugar. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, clearly the show is more popular than I realized among the whites. Also, there was a hashtag started, hashtag not all Chads. A little too much.
In reference to Chad from last week?
Yes. And I've gotten a lot of people letting me know that their name is Chad and they are not a terrible person. I wasn't talking about you guys, but thanks for listening and keep emailing me because it's very delightful. I'm enjoying it very much. Over the weekend, I went to Philadelphia to visit our dear friend Aaron Wack, former guest of the podcast. We had a beautiful weekend in your hometown, and we went to a museum together called the Colored Girls Museum in Germantown. It's run by a remarkable woman named Vashti DuBois, and you know, she's just turned her home into all these pieces of art about the experience of being a black woman and experience about being a black girl and girlhood. And there are these beautiful antique dolls, a lot of fiber art, stained glass. And it was just unlike any experience of a museum I've ever been to in the sense that we were not left to our own devices in it. We were spending the afternoon with this woman, talking about where each piece came from and who made it and why it's in her home and being held up as an artifact. It was just a good reminder that there is so much beauty in the mundane and beauty in the everyday, mm-hmm. and the things that we make and create could be in a museum. It was just a great, it was a great afternoon. I had a great time. So shout out to you, Vashti, for opening your home to us. Okay, and then the last thing I want to mention is Beyonce got a bikini. So it made me realize she showed off her beautiful cobalt blue bikini and still her belly bump. Babies are still on the way. And it made me realize that I need to get my beach gear together. And I'm someone who has my beach bag packed. It's always ready. There's always bottles of water cooling in the freezer, ready to go. Like, I'm someone who likes to have that stuff on lock. So I also wanted a two-piece, but not a bikini. So I had to figure out what that would look like. And so I ended up getting some cute...
Oh, go on.
Well, a two-piece.
I'm just
think
trying
about
to
it.
Figure out how this works, yes.
It's just two pieces that you wear that aren't a bikini. It's not rocket science. So I dug out some old swim trunks that I have, and I found my Fenty Puma sports bra. That's going to be one look for when I'm feeling a little more mask. And then I got some high-waisted black bikini bottoms and a really cute, like, black mesh, like a cute mesh top. So
Is it Thursday? Jen and Leslie, we're in mesh. Is it Sunday? It must be in two pieces near some sand.
That's my summer look. It's just all mesh and sand.
Okay, so what should we talk about then? Because
I mean, there's a very clear overlap in our Venn diagram, right?
Yeah, it's probably Baywatch and your bikini situation, which I can't. your two piece situation.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
All right. So, I don't know. I feel like one of the things that is interesting to me about the Baywatch movie is something that is also interesting to me about you, which is beach life and beach culture. And I am not a beach goer. I wind up at the beach maybe once a year officially.
What? How is that possible? I literally go to the beach every weekend.
Okay, so I've been thinking about why I have this, because for all the time that we've known each other, you tell me you go to the beach and I go, good for you. I'm never doing it. Why would you do that? And then I started to think about why, I mean, because it was so irrational. Why don't I like to go to the beach?
Good question.
And I really started to think about why that was. And part of it was, as a kid, I grew up in Philadelphia, as you mentioned. Our beach was on the Jersey Shore. Our section of the Jersey Shore beach situation was Wildwood. As far as I can tell, not the nicest beaches. We didn't have a lot of money when I was a kid, so it was a big deal. Like, basically, my entire family pitched in to get a house in Wildwood. We trek over to the beach, and I remember the beach as being filthy. Like, I don't remember how filthy, but filthy enough for me to have a complex about being barefoot in the sand, for instance.
Interesting.
And I remember going to the beach and just sitting in the house and reading and watching MTV.
Aw, my baby.
Those are my memories of being at the beach, because I hated.
Well, we can't go to Rockaway then, because it's not gonna soothe the issues that you had as a child around the beach.
But I also realized, flash forward like 25 years, and I'm in a relationship with a guy mm-hmm. whose family has a house also on the Jersey Shore in a place called Avalon, which is the opposite of Wildwood. Mm. The beaches are pristine and it's very white. I mean, as an adult, I was just cognizant of being the only black person on the beach. And then I started to think more. There's a large history of black people and water mm-hmm. in public space, and how one of the reasons that, for instance, the stereotype about black people not being able to swim, it isn't because we're lesser humans and we don't have a native ability right. to swim. It's that we couldn't get in the damn pool.
Or the beach.
Or go to the beach for so long.
Decades, yeah.
And thinking about this, my relationship to the beach as a black person was really funny watching Baywatch and having Dwayne Johnson be a lifeguard in this movie. We're taking David Hasselhoff's job, mm-hmm. keeping his name, but, you know, replacing him in this franchise. And how interesting it was to see a show that I associate as being a show about these white lifeguards mm-hmm. saving white people on the beach, now being a space in which, you know, there are two black lifeguards and their job is to sort of police the beach.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk to you about the beach because you are a beach goer.
I'm the number one beach bunny in Brooklyn. Everybody knows it.
I mean,
like, people text me on Saturday morning, like, you at the beach. I'm like, yeah, dog, I've been here for hours. Where are you? Let me take you to the beach. And then I want to hear about your relationship to the beach. Let's dive in. So we're going to talk about the beach, capital T, capital B, and our relationships to it. But what kicked this off is the movie Baywatch came out on Friday, the adaptation of the 25-year-old franchise starring Dwayne Johnson, a.k.a. The Rock, Zac Efron, the babelicious Priyanka Chopra. Like, I could not take my eyes off her the whole film.
She's
the best Bond villain I've ever seen in my entire life.
Stunningly beautiful.
And the film basically takes place, I mean, did they shoot on a beach? There were no shots of the beach. There were shots of people in the water, and then there were shots of the sand. I don't know where what beach they were at or they were supposed to be on Earth, but basically it's about a bunch of lifeguards policing and patrolling a beach. And basically some SHIT goes down.
So here's a clip of some of that SHIT. This is Dwayne Johnson and Zac Efron and Alexandra Daddario, who plays the Yancey Butler part from Baywatch, and Yahya Abdul-Mateen II as the cop. Let's go.
You turned the canals into the goddamn X Games.
Yeah, that's because we were in lifeguard pursuits.
Oh, okay. My bad. Except for this no such thing as lifeguard pursuit. Police do pursuits. When you do it, it's just some guys chasing some other guys. No offense.
I'm gonna take it.
How do I explain this so that you people understand?
You people? You people?
Oh, you don't get to say that. You're just tan. Right on.
Come on, brother.
I mean, what was that?
I don't understand what's happening.
So Dwayne Johnson fist bumps the black cop, basically, as a show of solid. I don't even know what is that. That was just not even necessary.
They're just like, we don't just police the beach. We police whiteness that's out of line. Like, you know, that's what we're supposed to know. But it is that scene is so strange also, because Zac Efron keeps being like trying to reassure that he's like, you are not cops. Why are you guys policing the beach in this way? And they're like, we are cops. It's like a very strange dynamic.
And I think part of the reason I didn't have very much fun at this movie is it is simultaneously trying to justify its existence while also trying to have fun, while also trying to advance some kind of plot that is the same plot that you get in these TV show to movie franchise situations, like 22 Jump Street and 21 Jump Street, etc.
It was very strange to watch a film ostensibly about the beach that really didn't involve the beach whatsoever.
Part of me was sort of disappointed that the movie didn't take the beach much more seriously than it did. And there's no appreciation of beach culture.
But do you even know what beach culture is, though, as someone who has never, like, has no relationship to the beach? Like, what do you think beach culture is?
That's a really interesting question. I think my relationship to an idea of beach culture mostly comes from popular culture.
But movies like what? Don't say Jaws.
Well, I mean, Jaws isn't beach culture, but Jaws, like, there's an argument to be made about the way in which the beach functions as a sort of psychic experience, right? The things that you're afraid of happening to you at the beach happen in the most extreme and impossible way in Jaws.
But that movie is basically a lesson on not going to, it's right. Like not getting in the water, not going
to
the beach.
But there is a beach tradition in American movies, and its high point was the 1960s with the Annette and Frankie movies and Gidget.
Gidget! Oh my God, I grew up watching Gidget. Gidget is one of my favorite all-time movies. I had a Gidget poster in my bedroom. It's why I went to surf camp when I graduated from high school. I feel like that movie really does capture what it's like to live at the beach for a season, which is you wake up, you go to the beach, you wake up. Everything you're doing throughout the day involves some aspect of getting in the water. And Blue Crush, I think, is the other. I mean,
oh, Blue Crush.
My God. Be still my heart. Okay. Be still my heart.
Yes.
Because that is like, I still watch Blue Crush on the regular for many reasons. But it's a great beach film in that same way where you understand what it means to embody living within and next to the water.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're not even like trying to get dressed anymore because you're gonna wet that day.
Right. And so for me, I think that is an aspect of it. And the movies were really interested in that. And it was just kids hanging out at the beach. And everybody would say that the thing that changes the people's relationship to the beach is Jaws. But I would say it's Planet of the Apes, where you see the Statue of Liberty just sort of lodged on the beach. And that, to me, is the kind of like the transition point from this fun beach-going situation at the movies to something slightly more doom-oriented.
And sinister.
Right. I think what we're talking about with these beach movies is fantasy, no matter how you classify it. I really like a particular kind of beach fantasy,
mm-hmm.
and it tends to veer toward the dystopic and the dangerous. I like a movie called Stranger by the Lake, which is about set at a gay cruising beach in France. There's somebody among these men knocking them off.
What?
It's not homophobic. It actually is an exploration of attraction more than it is the other thing. It's a beautiful movie. It's suspenseful. It's creepy. I mean, Jaws is to me like an experience I like having as a moviegoer
terrifying.
Watching the beach. But there's another kind of beach movie that I'm drawn to.
Okay.
And it's the one that's just about where people go to feel their most romantic selves. Because if you think about what the beach really is, it's the most extreme place in a geographical setting. It's the outer limit. And so there's a way in which the beach is this free space. This free, I mean, unless you're in Baywatch, this free unpoliced space, right?
Right.
And I'm thinking about scenes from Terms of Endearment where Jack Nicholson is driving Shirley MacLaine along the beach in his convertible.
It's true. Actually, and there's a really cute date scene in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead where they go for a walk on the beach and they're like, the turtles are like mating and
yes.
it's actually like really cute
yes.
and they eat like french fries.
We associate the beach in this very interesting way with love and romance and friendship. There's a great scene in A Star Is Born that has a version of this. It's a little bit darker. The great scene, the famous scene from Here to Eternity with Deborah Carr and Burt Lancaster rolling around in the sand. The most romantic scene from Moonlight is Chiron and Kevin on the beach. Who knows what's going to happen when you're out there? Who knows what you're going to meet? Who knows what emotion you're going to let take over you and express itself. I mean the way that it does between Chiron and Kevin on the beach in Moonlight. I think that there's something, there's a weird possibility that can happen out there. I mean,
mm-hmm.
at least that's what I'm identifying. And yet when I'm personally there, okay, I guess I should ask you, what do you do when you're at the beach? What are you actually doing?
I do everything at the beach. That's like a funny question. I treat the beach like my backyard. Like I go to the beach with books. I usually go with a group of friends that I want to spend more time with and talk to. And your skin is sunburned and hot and tight and you're coated with sand and you're drinking like a cold seltzer or a beer. Or like for me going to Rockaway Beach, which I have a very close relationship to various parts of Rockaway Beach, but you know, before and after Sandy especially, but going to the beach and eating like a hot dog or eating like a hamburger or eating a taco and like hearing the music of New York because people bring
oh, yeah.
amps. It's such a social mixing bowl for me. But I have to say, this was my big problem with the movie Baywatch, which was that it captured none of that pleasure. It mm-hmm. captured none of the experience of what it's like to lay out and get, you know, get sun all day and be covered in sand and covered in salt and like see your crushes and like put on your cute suit and listen to tunes. Mm. It was, the entire thing was about these people who got their kicks off of policing a beach. And as much as they were positioning themselves as do-gooders and were protecting this safe space, it wasn't clear who they were protecting it for or
right.
who they were protecting
right.
it from. And yes, I know that there was kind of a drug problem at the beach. But if you remember from the movie, the drugs weren't really in distribution on the beach. They
right.
were always
they
involved with
up.
The crime. It was like tied to the dead bodies washing up. It really wasn't about people on the beach getting high. It was about something in relationship to the beach. So I found it hard to watch. I found it to be kind of a little bit frustrating for that reason.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I don't want that necessarily from a beach movie. As a person who, while having not nearly as deep an empirical beach-going experience as you do, all my secondhand beach knowledge coming from popular culture and, you know, my preference for a darker version of the beach, I like Death in Venice. Sue me! But there also isn't an alternative to something like Death in Venice where there's no, this movie isn't even trying to give you like an Ursula Andress getting out of the water in Dr. No or like Bo Derek running on the beach in 10.
It was strange for a film that was just full of people in like skin tight swimsuits and like skin hugging wetsuits.
Not
it was
sexy.
Not sexy at all. And I couldn't figure out why. I mean, except for the villain, except for
Priyanka Chopra.
Yeah, Priyanka. What a babe. We don't have to go into that. We don't have to like objectify her too much, but she looked delicious the
and
whole time.
And she didn't actually want to be,
she was covered head to toe the whole time.
And it's the sexiest person
in the movie. Is not about skin. Anyway.
But in terms of this movie's relationship to the beach, I equate it to that moment in The Truman Show where Jim Carrey is like in the boat and he hits the edge of the world and realizes the whole thing is fake.
Yeah.
I feel like Baywatch is like that. It's like a, it's a movie that might think it's two dimensions, but really is like one.
Yeah.
And that's a problem, obviously. But also, I think that it doesn't fulfill either of the things that are interesting about real life beach going or pop culture beach going.
But it does capture something that's very what it means to try to go into a beach right now in America. Like, there is something in that movie, though, where they spend the whole time determining who gets to be on the beach and who, what they get to do. And there's only, there's one line at the end of the film where they justify going after the villain, not just for the fact that she's this drug kingpin or queenpin? What's the phrase? Whatever. She's this, she's running this cartel.
Kingpin works.
Yeah. She's running this cartel using boats and the beach somehow. It's never explained.
Also,
there's so much.
If she's killing all her henchmen, how is she like queen of the drug dealing business on the beach?
But there's only one line in the very end of the movie where they kind of reveal that the reason they're going after her is because she's buying up all the real estate around the beach to continue this and expand this operation. So that's like the crux of the film. And so they kind of say, well, she's trying to privatize the beach. And that's the only moment within whatsoever that you understand that they are maybe defending something else that's worthwhile, which is trying to retain the space for public use, which was the only compelling part of the movie to me, which was a throwaway line before they...
It's a punchline. You know. I mean, it actually is a throw. It's not even a punchline. You're right. It's a throwaway line. But this gets us to the other side of this conversation, right? Because Baywatch is an imperfect conflation of the fantasy that you want when you go to the beach, the romance and or the fun and the regulation of what it's like to be at the beach. And the policing of the beach, in this sense that the beach could be taken away from you at any minute, that it's not as free as it probably should be. Meanwhile, there's a whole other reality of what it's like to go to the beach that you never see in the movies. And I feel like we should take a break. And then when we come back, we can talk about not only your relationship to the beach and my relationship to the beach, our different relationships, but also the history around maybe those relationships.
All right. Well, before we do that, you got something for me?
I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. Do what you want me to do.
Better than I could
dream. I'm a private dancer in any old music room.
We have such different relationships to the beach, which are probably very much tied up in the history of how the beach has worked as a place of public access and as a proxy for exclusion and segregation. And it's very tied to the racial history of a public space like the beach in America.
Yeah.
For example, I grew up going to the beach in Solomon's Island, which is an area in Chesapeake Bay in Maryland. There's a army base or some sort of military zone. I don't know. But because my father was in the army, we were able to go at a discount. We were able to always go. And as you know, military bases can be some of the most diverse places in our country. Lots of people are in the armed services. And so for me growing up, that's something we did every summer. And even after my parents got divorced, there was still always a trip to a beach, either Virginia Beach or somewhere in the Carolinas or back to Solomon's Island with my dad. So I never really experienced that feeling of not being welcome at the beach or not being allowed or the beach being this like forbidden or less than, I don't know, less than experience for me.
That's fascinating. I've only come to find out how free you can feel at the beach. I also am aware of the history of segregation that my family had to deal with going to the beach. And where we would go, where my grandmother would go, and probably her sisters and brothers when they would go to the beach. I mean, we wound up at Wildwood, but my adult grandmother liked to gamble. And she also liked to go to the beach. And, you know,
I love this woman.
She could only go to Chicken Bone Beach. And it was a segregated little stretch of Atlantic City's beach. And it was, I mean, she never really talked about, like, what the experience was like. It was just known that that was the Black Beach. And it was a fun beach to be on. Sammy Davis Jr. was at this beach. Duke Ellington was, I mean, they loved Chicken Bone Beach.
Amazing.
And the name, by the way, was not Black people's name for that stretch of the beach.
Of course not.
It was white people's. Same with the Inkwell in Los Angeles, in Santa Monica. Or, yes.
That's so racist.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't call it the Inkwell. White people
also
did.
Side note, great film starring Jada Pinkett Smith and Lorenz Tate. Just go watch it. That's also a beach summer movie for me. Anyway, continue. I know. Don't even say whatever that face means. So
I know that my family's relationship to going to the beach involved having to deal with segregation and or having to be on previously segregated beaches. And it just makes you think about whether or not you're welcome on any beach ever. And so we'll just talk really quickly about this history of trying to desegregate the beaches. Mm-hmm. And in the 1960s and late 50s and 1960s, there were these protests basically called wade-ins, mm-hmm. W-A-D-E-ins, like sit-in, but wade, like wade into the water. Instead of wading into the water necessarily, they were more like people sitting on the beach mm-hmm. and protesting or like, you know, protesting on the shore itself. And it's just remarkable to think that this was another contested space. I mean, there wasn't a space that wasn't contested.
Right.
And the beach, of course, being in some ways the last frontier of this. Mm. And a lot of these beaches didn't become desegregated until the late 1960s.
Wow.
And I'm not talking about just Biloxi, Mississippi.
That's so disturbing.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
The beaches were segregated there. Lots of cities. Chicago's Rainbow Beach recently had a plaque, or mm-hmm. not recently, but now has a plaque mm-hmm. memorializing the people protesting these yeah. wade-ins and the desegregation of those beaches.
It's wild how much of this is easily forgotten, too.
You don't think about the beaches being a so-called contested space.
That's right.
But of course it was.
Yeah, of course it was. How could it not be?
I mean, it's the most pleasurable thing that is a public yeah. institution. And a lot of the attempts in some of these cities to privatize the beaches by the residents who had houses near the beaches was condoned until it was made illegal. Because we're talking about American tax dollars.
Yeah.
You know,
and a lot of places it's still condoned. I mean, that's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. I mean, New York, there's a reason it's so hard to get to Montauk. There's a reason it's so hard to get to the Hamptons. It's, you know, that stuff is still very exclusive. I mean, Rockaway is the people's beach and still in a lot of ways, but it's also because the people can't get anywhere else, you know.
I'm probably carrying around a lot of that.
Yes, you are.
Awareness and not even really being fully cognizant of it.
Can I offer you something?
Yes.
Can we go to the beach and can you lay in my arms like baby Chiron and I'll just swish you back and forth and Rockaway?
Yes, Juan, yes, swish me.
I will say that I do find the experience of jumping into the ocean to be an incredibly therapeutic and healing one. Mm. I mean, it's difficult mm-hmm. at Rockaway because mm-hmm. you will sometimes see things in the water that are unsavory.
I don't like this.
I'm not going to tell you the kinds of things you might see. I did step in a boot once. I stepped in a man's boot and I couldn't get it off. I started screaming. People thought an animal was attacking me, but it was a boot. but I'll take you to a nice part.
I mean, I have been thinking a lot in the last couple of days about my actual relationship to the beach, and I do have one, and it isn't entirely negative. It's somewhat along the lines of what we have been talking about before. Like, I came out to my best friend on a beach in Savannah.
Oh, my God.
At nighttime.
Really?
And yes.
What year was this?
1997.
Oh, my God. That's
on
incredible.
On a beach in Savannah. And I was terrified to do it. But I got to the water and I just felt free. And I felt like I'm going to do it right here. If he doesn't like it, he's stuck with me for the rest of the weekend. But I packed my bag in case something bad happened and his family rejects me. But it was fine. It wasn't even a big deal. He didn't even care.
Oh, my God.
So that happened at the beach.
So I have a similar relationship around queerness and gayness in the beach as well, though.
Mm-hmm.
It became the locus of my social life when I was reconnecting to my queerness. For me, it was really important to start spending time at the gay section of Reese Beach. So I've been going to the beach in New York since I've lived here. I mean, mm-hmm. I've lived here 9 years. I've probably been going to the beach for 8 of those years. And when I wanted to find more of a queer and a gay community, I found it at the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as someone who, there are a lot of queer spaces in New York City. Most of them are for men. Most of them are for white gay men. And I mostly mean the bar scene in Hell's Kitchen and the bar scene in Chelsea.
Oh, sure.
And there are very few, if any, bars that are geared towards or owned by or for gay women. And the ones that do exist are either slowly going out of business or they're being taken over by people who feel entitled to that space or not respectful of that space or not cognizant of why a space like that needs to exist, which I understand is a hard thing to wrap one's mind around, but it's true. It does need to exist. But for me, for a long time, the beach was where that was at. And I got my first series of dates by just hanging out and looking cute on the beach. Ladies came up and got my number and took me out. One became my girlfriend for a little while. I mean,
I feel like what we're talking about is these two ideas that are sitting alongside each other, and they're kind of communicating with each other, but they're separate, and it's almost impossible to reconcile this mystical, spiritual, religious aspect of sitting before this large body of water that just could take you away and never bring you back. To lie beneath this giant orb in the sky if the sun is out, and to worship that.
Yes.
And with the reality of not being permitted to worship either of those two things.
Right, right.
Or the problem of what can happen when all of that beauty and loveliness and freedom and pleasure and fun either go wrong or are threatened in some way. The beach is both a really safe environment and can be a fraught one too.
Yes, yes.
I also have been thinking while you've been talking about this community that you have when you go to the beach, and that you presumably you're going with a bunch of women, right?
It's a mixed bag. Queer bodies, queer folks.
Because, you know, my entree to pretty much all the beach going I've been doing as an adult has been with white people. I wonder how many of the beach goers carry with them this consciousness of the person they are at this beach. The way I do. It should be a place where I'm letting go of all that stuff. But if anything, I'm sitting with it. I am frolicking with it for the most part. Mm. And I'm aware that there was a time during which if I had gotten into that water, I would either be carted off.
Yeah.
Or I would be, space would be cleared for me because the white people in my vicinity would think I was contaminating the water. And that's tough.
There is a clear remedy.
Is it to go to the beach with you?
Mm-hmm.
It's just that simple.
No, but it's part of it.
Yeah.
I think it's part of it. I think that's part of how you get past those hangups and past those feelings. I think there is something incredibly special about being at Gay Reese, and it is so queer, it is so brown, it is so black, it is so white, it is so non-binary. There are so many different types of bodies and in various states of array and clothing, and it's so intergenerational too. Mm-hmm. And I think there is something really, I've found myself there, you know, and I think you can find yourself there too. Come with me.
I'm into that. I'll try it. I'll come with you. Just pick a day.
Cool.
That's our show.
Still Processing is a product of the New York Times. It is produced by Jenna Weiss-Berman, Henry Milofsky, Ricky Novetsky, and Max Linsky from Pineapple Street Media.
With editorial oversight from Sasha Weiss, Lisa Tobin, and Samantha Hennig.
Our theme music is by Kindness. It's called World Restart from the album Otherness.
You can find all our other episodes and fun things at nytimes.com/stillprocessing. And remember, if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, even if you're at the beach right now, please do it.
So, Wesley, other than going to the beach with me, what are you looking forward to this weekend?
I don't know. I might have to see Wonder Woman. Listen, because the fate of the free world hinges on this movie making a lot of money the way it's been thrown at us. If we don't see Wonder Woman, women will not be wonderful anymore.
That's how it works, by the way. But let's go see it.
All right, I'll go. Yes, let's just go. I'm just going to Wonder Woman.
Hey, Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris. My name is Emma Yaley. I'm calling mostly because you said for white people who watch Queen Sugar to call up, so that's what I'm doing. I don't know what else you wanted to know about that, but there it is. Thank you. Bye.